Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.
In 2015, an elite DFS Army commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Welcome to the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. This week we will be headed for yet another inaugural event. We're headed to Minneapolis, Minnesota for the 3M Open. And before I get into the course, the event, first I got to remind you guys that at DFSArmy.com, you can not only check out the full version of this podcast, you can access all of our daily fantasy tools, the research station, breaking down everything statistically you'll need for this golf event, and of course our domination station, lineup optimizer, all sports included, in one low package cost, awesome coaching channels, you get coaches' notes for every event that goes down. It's really awesome stuff. It's a great one-stop shop for all your daily fantasy needs, DFSArmy.com, and use promo code TACO to support the pod. So, going to Minneapolis for the 3M Open. This used to be a Champions Tour event, actually. It's one they would run yearly. It's going to be hard to use that to predict what's going on here at the inaugural event for the PGA Tour. You know, the young guys are probably going to do it a little more dirty than the older guys did, and for the most part, it really was like a birdie fest for those guys. Now, I mean, it's not going to be as bad as last week, you know, having a 25-under winner, but you could still see, you know, some pretty low scores here. As long as you keep out of the water, the water is going to be a big part of this. It's protecting some key holes, including two par fives, and, you know, that's going to add to the overall variance of this tournament. You know, that and it being a first-time event. You saw last week, you know, with another first-time event. Didn't really know what was going to happen. Most of the studs ended up doing horribly. Dustin Johnson at $12,000. I was coming in at 5-1. He missed the cut. So you never really know what's gonna happen at a new course like this, especially when there's, you know, water in play and, you know, not as many par fives as last week. You know, one of the par fives was converted into a par four for this tournament. They've actually made, you know, some measures to toughen up the course because they couldn't just play the same course that the Champions Tour guys do. It's one of the easiest courses on the Champions Tour, and the PGA guys would have a field day. Had really wide fairways, but they've gone ahead and narrowed some of them down. It's still going to be very easy. The greens are humongous. Yeah, it's not going to be that hard overall. They have lengthened some tees and made some holes a little longer, which makes a lot of sense with how long these guys hit it. But you know, a lot of it's up in the air. All three par fives actually are really close to each other in length, just a hair under 600 yards each, and with water in play in two of them. I think eagles might be a little bit hard to come by, but as far as everything else, birdies are on the table with a lot of these par fours. You know, par four scoring is going to be huge, between 400 and 500 yards. That's pretty much the key range that we're looking for. There's one par five that's slightly over 500 yards, but you know, still there's half of the course pretty much in that range. And you know how, you know, par threes don't really affect fantasy scoring all that much. It's really the par fives that do, with, you know, a lot of these just being three-shot par fives for pretty much everybody. Sort of kind of equals it out, just makes it a birdie hole. The par fours are where you're going to want to be looking for your guys to be solid at. I think that's where a lot of the birdies can be made up here. And, you know, it's another weak field. You know, we've got Dustin Johnson. He's not here. You're pretty much replaced by Brooks Koepka, and then followed by Matsuyama and Jason Day, as far as strength goes. So, you know, not very top-heavy, or just a really overall weak field. This is, you know, the Midwest Swing is off to a pretty slow start as far as commitments go. Maybe one day, you know, people see it as more of a prestigious event. I don't think last week's event, the Rocket Mortgage Classic, is ever going to attract very many people. And if you look at, like, the John Deere and other places like that, not the strongest of fields that go there. So it's honestly kind of a lull before the Open Championship in a few weeks here. And, you know, that's fine. It can't be exciting all the time. Honestly, golf is a little bit more exciting in the spring than, you know, now. And honestly, some of the European Tour events are really good. You know, this is where, you know, the PGA Tour events aren't quite as interesting. But you have some really strong European Tour events, like the Scottish Open and I think the Irish Open, Rory McIlroy's tournament. And a lot of the best golfers in the world, like, you know, Jon Rahm, who came runner-up last week in Spain. You know, they're going to be going over there instead of going to these weirdo courses and what's honestly flyover country. And I say that as someone from the Midwest myself. So, yeah, overall what we're targeting here statistically, I'm kind of looking at double bogey avoidance, just guys who aren't, like, crazy aggressive. But at the same time, I do want guys who are crazy aggressive. You know, as far as scoring goes, because if you don't find the big double, triple bogeys from hitting in the water or just getting too far out here, it is going to be very, very easy. It's not going to be a course where we see a lot of pars. You know, people will be birdieing quite frequently. You can just cough it back up a whole lot, and, you know, that'll kind of strike people randomly. Honestly, I think a lot of people are starting to get on the same page. I don't think Brooks Koepka is going to be very popular, break 20% ownership after what DJ did last week. And, you know, a couple of ways you could attack that. You could go back to the Stars and Scrubs lineup like everyone had last week that burned them. Or you could just say, you know what, just screw the guys up top. They're way too expensive. Probably going to find ownership just because they're the names that people know. Although, honestly, the field that you're playing against this week is probably going to be more of your diehards for fantasy golf. I don't think a lot of the casuals are really signing up to go blind into the 3M Open. So yeah, you can see the weakness of the field just after the first, like, four or five guys, pretty similar to last week, except even more so. You got a lot of really questionable guys that are priced well up there. And honestly, the way I see it, if someone's over like 20% projected ownership for me, I'm probably going to fade that. A few guys that, you know, really stick out in that regard, who I would like. Otherwise, they're just, you know, there aren't very many good plays that I think everyone can agree on them being really good plays, like guys in really good form. You know, a lot of the expensive guys are shaky, unproven guys, or guys that are just, you know, performing a lot differently than they usually do. It's going to be a really, really tricky week to make lineups. And honestly, if someone's going to be popular, I don't think there's much reason to play those guys, no matter who they are. There's definitely no locks here. I mean, you know, hopping into the field here, you can look at Brooks Koepka, 11,900, and you were getting Dustin Johnson for $100 more last week, and he was 5-1. Well, Koepka's 7-1, 8-1, depending on where you're looking. You know, he's really shined at majors, obviously, but his last two non-major events, he's finished T50 in Canada, and a couple weeks ago at the Travelers, T57. You know, makes a lot of birdies, don't get me wrong there. Definitely going to be someone that can, you know, attack the par fives and all that. It's just, you know, it's kind of apparent that he doesn't bring his A game when it's not, like, a huge, important field. He's not going to care, really, about, you know, playing it safe with the cut line. I'm sure he really doesn't care about making or missing the cut. He's probably just going to take the shots that he either needs to practice or Just shots he feels like taking. You know, he has the liberty to do that. He's come, you know, top two in the last four majors. I think at this point he's earned that. So, for Brooks, honestly, I'm just going to be off of that. I don't see his ownership getting over 20%, maybe even not even over 15%. Not after what DJ did last week. And, you know, he obviously has the highest upside of anyone. You know, number one in projected round score, projected fantasy points per round. There are the three long par fives here, and he ranks third in the field in those. But, you know, you don't have any of your short par fives either that he really, really carves up. Second overall in that, but also in the key range, the medium and long par fours, you know, he's fifth and second in those categories. I mean, obviously he fits the course. Obviously he projects out for the most fantasy points, but for his salary, I really doubt that you have to go there. It's going to be really hard to make lineups if you roster him, especially paired up with anyone else above like 8K. Pretty much has to be Koepka and then some punts, and you know it could work because honestly the you know the 9, 8, 7K guys, they aren't all too inspiring. You almost might just want to go with a safe commodity, but I don't think he's that safe for. You know, the kind of stud he is. He's the world's number one golfer, but you know, usually when a golfer that's number one in the world tees it up in an event like this, I don't feel the need to roster them no matter what, unless it's like, you know, peak Tiger back in the day. You know, not trying to overreact too much to what Dustin Johnson did last week. I'm just saying, like, you know, it's just not the way to go in this tournament format. You know, I'm trying to get him as much as I can over on draft.com, where ownership doesn't matter. Him and Matsuyama, just whoever I get first between those two, I'm happy with. And that's probably what I'm going to do with these guys. Of course, if I had to pick anyone in the top two, it would be Matsuyama. Although Matsuyama's pretty close in price to Jason Day. Actually, he's a bit higher in the odds books, which, you know, makes a little sense. Day has a little bit more pedigree than him, but Matsuyama's been really, really hot lately, or just all season long, making all of his cuts. He projects out to perhaps be one of the highest-owned guys, if not the highest-owned guy, because, you know, it's hard to really nail one good play. Like there aren't too many people that stick out big time, but Matsuyama, you know, five straight top 25 finishes, and, you know, this year he has, you just look at this entire year, the last 26 events he's played, 82% field rank, that's best in the entire field, and, you know, if salary wasn't a thing, obviously he would be, you know, the safest play of anyone on the board, definitely safer than Brooks, doesn't quite have the upside. I mean, he has not really been posting podium type finishes, just been super rock solid and consistent. Starting to score less, you know, birdies and fantasy points and stuff, but I still like what he's been doing, getting 3.6 birdies to the field on average. He just doesn't really have much eagle upside, I guess. I mean, he can eagle, he just doesn't do it very often. He's just safe. He's about making that money. Great for cash games. I'm probably going to play him in cash games. Get him in other places, and then just fade him in GPP for how popular he's going to be. Potentially, he could be a little lower owned than expected, but it's really hard to peg where the ownership is going to go this week. The options are very, very limited. Going down to Jason Day at $10,900. He started out at 10-1. Now he's currently at 9-1, as where Matsuyama's at 10-1. So he's kind of beaten him in that regard. Of course, he's nowhere near as safe as Matsuyama, as he definitely doesn't mind missing a cut or two. He only makes 70% of his cuts, as where Matsuyama makes about 95% of them. He's struggled on easy courses so far this year. At 5 easy courses, he has a 64% field rank, compared to, you know, Matsuyama, 86% there in 8 events played. The good thing about Jason Day is that he usually loses strokes approach, but he's kind of turned that around and has at least become pretty decent in that regard. He's gaining strokes in every single category. And funny enough, putting is the category he's been gaining the least over the last 10 rounds. Which, you know, Jason Day is perhaps the best putter on the PGA Tour overall, just throughout the year. So it's kind of interesting to see that. He does struggle a bit on bent grass compared to other surfaces. Not terribly worried about that this week. You know, these are actual, like, bent grass greens all the way, not mixed with POA or anything. And we've been on a lot of POA lately, so the putting should be a little straightforward. I'm honestly factoring in putting more than usual. Just at POA, you want to factor it in less because it's kind of random. Bent grass a little more straightforward. And, you know, guys tend to continue to play well on that surface if they have before. So Jason Day, you know, he missed the cut at the Memorial at his hometown event, but he, like, always does that. He's, like, really terrible at the Memorial. I don't know what it is. He just, he can't get it done where he lives. Probably just, you know, is badgered by people in a similar regard to, like, Charles Howell III at the Masters or something. I don't know, but for some reason he always sucks there. But if you look past that, it's all top 25 finishes, going all the way back to, like, what, the Masters? He did miss the cut at the Valspar right after the Players, which he posted a top 10 finish at. I mean, he's been fine in the strong fields and stuff. Was great in the West Coast Swing, just super solid, all top 15s there. It's kind of slowed down a little bit, but in this field, he doesn't seem terrible. I think he'll still be fairly popular. Because again, you know, you'll hear as you go through the podcast, if you're a VIP member over there on DFSArmy.com, you'll hear that there really aren't too many great plays to stick out, and you kind of just want to just fish for a play that you think people aren't going to be on. Just go with it. Might as well. So Jason Day, I don't know, he's probably still in the part of the field I'm going to be avoiding as I go more towards, you know, either balanced, contrarian type roster construction. And since I'm going Matsuyama in cash, I'm not going to take a Day in cash, but I don't think I'd ever really take him in cash, even though he, you know, he tends to be pretty solid with getting top 20s and stuff. He's always a withdrawal risk at any time. He tends to miss, you know, a lot more cuts than Matsuyama. And he's about the same price, so yeah, driving accuracy a little bit lower than Mats. His greens and reg actually have been a little bit better than Matsuyama lately, but he loses birdies to the field. You know, that's something you gotta worry about with him. You know, tends to par a lot. But in Vegas, they've got the exact same top 20 odds, so kind of a similar play, and he's a little bit cheaper. I just think that, you know, Matsuyama is a little bit more of a floor there. He's just going to come in with higher ownership. And then down to Bryson DeChambeau at $10,500. He's been off the radar for a little while, but he's put together three good finishes in a row after three horrible finishes in a row at the RBC Heritage, PGA Championship, and Charles Schwab Invitational. Was 22nd in Memphis, and most recently 8th at the Travelers, tied with Jason Day there. He's 2nd in the field to Koepka in projected DraftKings fantasy points per round. Has an 89% field rank on easy courses in 6 easy courses played, and a 96% weak field rank split. So he beats 96% of golfers at the 4 events he's played on in really, really weak fields. And this is honestly where Bryson is a specialist at. If you look at all of his wins have, you know, finishes of minus 15 to minus 25. Like, he does really well at Birdie Fest. Again, like, really good at, you know, the easy courses, weak fields. Pretty good bent grass putter compared to normal. And his putter has been on fire lately, but so have his irons. It's just been his around the green game that's been struggling. The greens are so big. You know, we should see really high greens regulation this week. I don't think you have to worry about the scrambling quite as much. There's no scrambling out of the water. You know, you either hit that or you don't. So I think DeChambeau actually might get a little more popular than, you know, it would seem with his form coming in. Because I don't think I'm the only person that notices this. One thing I do notice, though, is that his double bogey worst percentage is kind of sky high right now, way higher than Matsuyama, way higher than Day.
He does about twice as much as those guys, so obviously GPP only. Like, I think that goes without saying here, but there really is some upside to using DeChambeau, even though his price is really, really up there at 10,500, 11,000 on FanDuel. And they've got a very similar play in Patrick Reed. You know, a guy that has pedigree, a guy that's won tournaments, a guy that, you know, has had some really questionable form over the, you know, what we consider about the medium term. You know, not just the last few weeks where he's been really good. Not really, really good. It's very similar to DeChambeau, where he had two solid finishes and then one really good top 10. And that was last week at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. He ended up coming fifth there. It was really solid tee to green. I was leading the field in tee to green after three rounds, I think. And usually that's not what Patrick Reed does that well. So I do like seeing that. Usually with this guy, it's, you know, similar to Day, where he's, you know, really bad with his irons usually and sprays it off the tee, is both short and inaccurate. But, you know, he's turned it around to at least be like normal, gaining zero strokes off the tee over his last 25, and his irons have been just on fire. So is his short game, you know, with his around the green work. But yeah, honestly, I don't know. He's way too expensive for me. I've liked using Patrick Reed as like a pocket play all year, pretty much, because people have been way off of him. And, you know, last week, especially in Showdown, he was absolutely great for me. I mean, we honestly crushed it last week. You know, the core went off. We obviously couldn't roster the winner in Nate Lashley. It wasn't possible. But, you know, we had guys in the chat late on Wednesday night, you know, talking Redmond up, getting Redmond in there, and he finished second. We had Rory Sabatini as the highest value play on the board, and he finished third. You know, Malnati did great again. He was a core guy. Really, the entire core went off, including Matsuyama. And the only guy that really screwed us was Sam Ryder, missing the cut by a stroke. Otherwise, it was an amazing week last week. We want to keep it going this week. And I don't know if Patrick Reed's the way that you're going to be doing that. You know, he doesn't, value-wise, he doesn't rate out better than anyone like 9,000 or above. He's the worst. His price is just way up there. You know, he ranks 35th in projected fantasy points per round. You know, if he was cheaper, maybe it'd be like cash gameplay. But even then, you know, it's kind of scary. So I don't know. I'll have just a sprinkle of him, but I'm definitely going to be underweight. And you can say the same about Joaquin Neiman here. $9,300 on DraftKings, $10,200 on FanDuel. I skipped over the good Rory. Let me talk about him real quick, because, you know, this is another guy who is kind of similar to Kokrak, where out of nowhere he's just making all the cuts in the world. So he has four top 10 finishes since the RBC Heritage. That's kind of nutty. He's got, like, I don't know, 13 or so made cuts in a row. I think it's like 11, 12, 13, something like that. He's been playing a lot lately, and he's just been posting solid finish after solid finish after solid finish. And finally, that price has caught up to him. Not so much on FanDuel, where I think he's a little bit better of a play, but on DraftKings, $9,500 is insane for Rory Sabatini. You know, I've seen Rory McIlroy at that price, which is just nutty. Of course, it would have to be at like a major there, but still. It's just astonishing what he's doing, honestly. And, you know, he's been doing it by making a ton of birdies, you know, just being solid in every single tee to green, or not even tee to green, like tee to hole. He's gaining strokes in every single category. A lot of them around the green, you know, but has been putting really hot over the last 25 rounds. Honestly, his weak spot, I guess, if you want to call it that, is his strokes gained approach. He's gained about 0.3 strokes approach per round over the last 10, 25 rounds. And that's still not bad, you know, especially in this field. He's going to rate out as one of the higher projecting players, even though, you know, it's ridiculous seeing him there. Now, he doesn't have much odds to pricing value, as Neiman and Finau below him are actually have little better odds, and he has the same as Hovland down there. We'll get to those guys. You know, I'm gonna give you free guys up to the 9K range, just because it's such a crappy field before, you know, we go premium here. But Roy Sabatini, God, I don't know what to make of him. He's, I guess, of all the chalk this week, he'd probably be the best chalk, but he's so expensive. And you just saw what Kokrak did after making like what 14 or 15 cuts in a row. I can't even remember how many cuts in a row he made. Although one of the events, you know, where I personally would consider it almost as bad as a miscut. It was like an MDF or like a T73 or something where he just blew up on the weekend. Nonetheless, you could see that out of Rory. I expected it at the U.S. Open. Somehow he ended up making the cut at Pebble at an event he was horrible at, and that's kind of what really got me on him last week. And he definitely delivered. Dude is awesome. I'm not entirely sure of what to do with him. I'm probably going to end up playing him because I got to play somebody. Like, it's really hard to figure out who to roster, and I don't think I want to just go like crazy on DeChambeau. I might just leave some salary on the table this week, honestly. It seems like a pretty decent play. Just focus on, you know, picking out those weirdos at less than 1% owned, you know, the Nate Lashleys of the world. And, you know, not to rant too long here, but God, I mean, if you've been following us at DFS Army and looking at our projections and notes and stuff, we've been on Lashley, like, really hard. I guarantee you he would have popped if he would have been rosterable last week and his price was reasonable, which of course it would be. The DS just spits him out constantly. He was always a guy in my notes, so kind of a real bummer we didn't get to capitalize on him winning and winning by such a decent amount, but I am happy for him. It's a really good story with him, so we'll talk about him later here, but anyway, you've got Joaquin Neiman at $9,300, you know, real nice guy, signed my hat, I like that about him, but, you know, two top five finishes in a row coming in, off of a really, really hot iron, or not iron, but, well, his irons are fairly hot, but really a hot flat iron with his putter. He's usually a pretty bad putter, but he turned that around over the last few weeks. I don't really like targeting that too much. You know, strokes gained approach, he's gaining around a half a stroke, which is pretty decent, but, you know, priced up so much for a guy who had, you know, missed a lot of cuts, honestly, this year. You know, it's just turned around recently over the last five events, especially the last two, finishing T5 in both of those, the Travelers and the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Just too pricey for me, even though price might not end up being a factor. By the time I get done fading all of these, you know, really expensive guys, you know, he did help in Showdown yet again this week. You know, Showdown's been going really awesome for us. I don't know. I don't mind him in that format, I guess. Maybe I will just play him, you know, more in Showdown, especially if he's showing that he's, you know, going to be making more birdies than he has. But, you know, I don't mind fading him in GPP, especially if he's going to be popular at all, which he might, you know, with his game log starting to look really nice. And, you know, people need to spend up the money, feeling the need to spend their entire salary. So, Neiman, and just a GPP play for me, but really, you know, just another one of these fades. And then you've got Tony Finau, coming off of three straight missed cuts after a runner-up finish at the Charles Schwab Invitational. And before that, he hit T64 at the PGA Championship, missed the cut there. T60 at the Wells Fargo, pretty much a miscut in my book, even though he made the cut. Very bad Tony Finau, but, you know, otherwise he would crush this course, honestly. Like, you know, a big strong point for him. He's top five in long par five scoring, fourth and sixth in medium and long par four scoring. And it all results in him being second in projected round score and fourth in projected DraftKings fantasy points per round. His driving accuracy has kind of fallen off a lot lately. He's, you know, long off the tee as always, but, you know, he used to gain a lot of birdies to the field. He's been losing birdies to the field a lot, and I know it kind of comes with, you know, these missed cuts here, but he is in quite a slump. Not like a Phil Mickelson slump, but it's kind of getting there, especially if he has a bad week this week. And the only two finishes... I kind of looked at that wrong, actually. I forgot that the runner-up there was the Charles Schwab, but I was going to say the fifth at the Masters, You know, that was just another top 10 at a major for him, which is something he's been doing a lot lately, but the PGA Championship performance was just pretty bad. You know, he has flashed a little upside there with that Charles Schwab finish, but it went right back to the gutter after that. I think it's going to keep people off of him. I like his splits on easy courses. He's played 7 with an 82% field rank, and that should be that's 4th in the field. So, yeah, don't mind him. You know, he's got some upside. I know he's been in crappy form, but you know, maybe a switch to bent grass will help him. He does seem to putt a little bit better on bent grass greens than other types of greens. And underneath him, Victor Hovland, $9,100. Crazy, crazy to see this guy cost so much already. It's insane. It's his 4th start officially on the PGA Tour. He was low amateur at the Masters. Well, actually, that makes it his 3rd start. Well, this would be his 4th start, but after being low amateur at the Masters, he came 12th at the U.S. Open. Super impressive, right? Made the cut at the Travelers, but finished T54. And then last week, he finished T13 at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Was kind of up there on the leaderboards and stuff. I don't really know what to make of him yet. He doesn't have much data. Only 12 shot link rounds to go off of for him. And, you know, so far in those rounds, he's crushed it with driving accuracy, hitting it almost 300 off the tee. But with a 72% greens regulation percentage, and that's adjusted to the field, gaining birdies, fantasy points, obviously, and just destroying it off the tee and, you know, approach. Ball striking is his forte. You know, he loses strokes around the green, loses strokes putting. Not by too much, but still. And we've yet to see him on bent grass greens so far this year. I'm definitely fading this. There's a little bit of a hype train behind him, and I can't really understand it. So, I mean, if he burns me, he burns me. But I really doubt this guy is going to be the next, like, he could be, but at least not right now. You know, we saw with guys like John Rahm, for example. He's, you know, someone that came in with just huge expectations. Probably similar to about what we're seeing from Hovland here, you know, with him being just so expensive so early. And now, honestly, the place to get a guy like him is draft.com. I know I kind of shill for the site a lot. I'm just telling you, it's a great strategy for PGA. I think he's one of those, if I recall correctly, him and like Sungjae Im also that I'm about to talk about, these guys are perpetually way, way under-projected on that site. Like, you have to go way down the bottom to find them. And it really gives you some edge, because a lot of people just go by the default projections, and they've got guys like Kevin Na and Keegan Bradley just way overrated, like way overpriced, overprojected, and people pick them over, you know, guys like this who, and you know, whenever I'm drafting over there, I'm trying to just draft the guys I want to fade on DraftKings, just get a little cross hedge going on there. So that's definitely my plan with Hovland, and you know, that'll move me right into Sungjae Im, who we've been loving, and last week I loved him quite a lot. You know, he's been good at finding birdies, like usual. But it's honestly been a short game lately. It's kind of a turnaround. You know, before he was like the ultimate iron player. He's kind of fallen off a little bit, honestly. But you know, short game has been really strong. Just gonna keep playing him though. I mean, this is our guy at this point. Just playing every single week. And, you know, like I said last week, I asked him if he qualified for every tournament on the PGA Tour, would he do it? And he said, in America, yeah. Just raking in that bread. You know he wants to make the cut. So, honestly, the course doesn't actually fit him very well. So he's really, really good at short par fives, but there are none of them on the course. He's significantly worse at the long par fives, and that's what they all are, the three shotters. Also struggles a bit medium par four. So if I were to fade Sungjae, this would be the week to do it, honestly, with his price and all. But I just like the guy too much. He's adorable. So that'll do it for the free section of this podcast. If you want to check out the rest of this podcast and get access to all the things I mentioned earlier, the full coverage for every site, good personalized coaching, really great community, really amazing non-toxic community, just a great place to hang out and sweat some DFS. You know, it's almost like a family there in the coaching channels. And of course, having your, you know, the Domination Station lineup optimizer and coach's notes to make getting lineups in at last minute really easy for you. You can check that out at dfsarmy.com and use promo code TACO to support the pod and get that lifetime 20% off discount. There should be a link in the description, and you can go check it out, or just you know, go to my Twitter at TACODFS. There should be a link. They'll send you right to dfsarmy.com. Hoping to have another good week like last week, so I'll be back for you VIP members for the full dive, but for the rest of you guys, I will see you next week.